The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
And folks, you're listening to The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
And what I have seen work for me, I once worked in a very toxic environment, for lack of a better word, toxic because it did not support work-life balance. I was working in an organization that was not happy to see me pregnant. And I actually really struggled through the pregnancy with my first child. And immediately I delivered, I actually quit. I resigned. I didn't enjoy pregnancy as much because for my first pregnancy, I was anxious the entire time. And I developed preeclampsia and the baby had to come early. For my second pregnancy, I was not anxious. He came unplanned. And I was just like, no, Rose, you're always organized. You were supposed to conceive after 5 years of your first child. Why are you conceiving after almost 2 years? No, this is not you. When the end product comes out, it is more ghetto. It is more ghetto than walking around with a bulging tummy. Because everybody tells you, oh, congratulations for a bundle of joy. What bundle of joy?
Which one is this you're speaking of?
You have serious surgery wounds. You are sleep deprived. Sometimes you don't have milk. This little being is crying, has a mind of its own. And somebody there tells you sleep when they sleep. So they sleep when you're taking a walk, basking them out in the sun. Do you lie down there and sleep? Yes, I went through postpartum. It's something I'm never, I'm not proud of, because you are supposed to be enjoying your bundle of joy, as you call them. Mm-hmm. But this tiny bundle of joy is a bundle of distress.
It's your boy, Billy, and we're back at it with another episode. I hope you guys are keeping well, keeping safe, and things are going well on your side, as they are on mine. And today my guest in the studio is Rose Osemo, a law practitioner, and she loves interior design, she loves cooking, learning something new, and spending time with her family. And today we're talking a lot about family. So, Rose, hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
How was your day?
My day was good, busy as usual, but we thank God.
You may unwind.
I always unwind between 8:30 and 9 o'clock, compulsory.
What does this unwinding entail?
It just maintains having a meeting with myself. I figure myself out. I ask myself, how was my day? How could it have been better? What did I miss? What did I gain? Very important.
So you actually do that on a daily basis?
Yes, because I live every day anyway. Say I breathe every day.
At the end of the day.
I live every day. Yes, I just want to breathe the day I don't wake up.
So speaking of, actually, now that you've brought that up, like, have you always been a very growth-centered person? Like, always, you know, looking after your growth and how you've been doing? Because obviously I know that connects with mental health. So have you always been that person for yourself?
I think I was. I just didn't realize that I was. But I've always been a very organized person and somebody who really takes care of their mental health. I love balance. And I think I just realized, I think I've always been somebody who is very keen on mental health and on finding balance. And I only realized this when I lost my balance. I lost focus on myself because I was very engrossed in fixing people and fixing things. It was always a rat race.
Mm.
Yes, and when I lost it, I could just not find myself. So I had to intentionally draw myself to this place where I realized that I have to find myself. I have to know who I am so that I'm able to then meet my objectives, meet my goals, set realistic goals. If I don't know myself, how will I set goals for myself?
And so with that, again, just now that you talk about balance a lot. So talk to me about first how you've been able to achieve, first even before kids, a good work-life balance. Because I know how perhaps law can be very taxing. Mm-hmm. So how are you able to achieve a good life work-life balance at that moment? And then now, obviously, with children in the picture, family, how are you able to balance all these things? Because for some of us, we're entering adulting and we're realizing, how have you guys been doing this for all these years without complaining? Because adulting is crazy. Having to balance a job, family, social life. How are you guys doing this? And then again, with you being an empath and obviously the part of your life where you used to want to try fix people and be there for everyone, but then you're neglecting yourself in the process. How do you finally be that person and saying that you taking care of Rose is you not being selfish? Because a lot of us, when we detach from that and want to not focus on ourselves, we feel like we're being selfish, we're not being there for others. But when were you able to finally just detach and say, I just want to be there for me, at least for once, like no one else will ever be there for me?
And foremost, you have to realize that you're not God. You're not the Trinity. You can't do everything. You can't do anything. For a human being to find balance, it's about prioritization. For me, what has worked for me is choosing my jobs very carefully. I don't run for job offers. And what I have seen work for me, I once worked in a very toxic environment, for lack of a better word, toxic because it did not support work-life balance. I was working in an organization that was not happy to see me pregnant. And I actually really struggled through the pregnancy with my first child. And immediately I delivered, I actually quit. I resigned because I knew this was not going to be healthy for my newborn. So by prioritization, this is what I mean. Jobs come and go. Family doesn't go. I'm stuck with family. But if I lose family, then it basically means that I've lost my grounding. I've lost my balance because I will be at a job. Then tomorrow I lose this job. Or one thing or the other happens. I don't have it anymore. But I'll have already lost my family, my friends, and everybody. So I have to prioritize. I know what comes first. Work is very important. And so how I have been landing my jobs is through a lot of careful networking. I place myself in a place of value where I know that somebody will pick me because of the value that I'm bringing. And surely if you're bringing value, nobody is going to use you as a donkey because you can actually deliver value in 4 or 5 hours of your day. So it means that when you sit on that seat, when you get to the office, you're still not on social media, chit-chatting, what? Mm-mm. You land there ready to deliver value. So that up, you'll rarely find me in the office after five, very rarely, unless I have a call that is with participants who are coming from other regions with time differences involved. But you'll rarely find me in the office past 5, but you'll also rarely find me in the office past 8 o'clock. Because I have to go and deliver value, I know at 1 o'clock I have to touch base with family, with my children, with my spouse. I have to. So that is how I find my balance, organization and prioritization. When it comes to friends, I'm a very picky person when it comes to friends. I have lots of acquaintances, but very few friends, because I go for quality and not quantity. So when it comes to friendships, just make sure that you're grooming yourself with quality, not quantity. You're just not picking anything and then everybody along the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, interesting. Now, first of course, your favorite podcast has many questions from what you've said, because you've said a lot of rich stuff. Firstly, speak to me about abundance mentality, where you've said that for you, you don't run for jobs. And you're very picky with that as well. So for a lot of us, we come from a mindset of scarcity, where we feel like we do not get another opportunity. So we'll just take anything and everything that is placed before us without even doing a background check, without scrutinizing if really this is what you want. And then eventually you'll find people quitting and, you know, the whole cycle of people jumping jobs over and over. And just it's just because we didn't do our due diligence and we are coming just from that scarcity mentality. So how would you probably tell someone to break that barrier? Because again, with Kenyans, we have a lot of that. I had a podcast 2 episodes ago where the guest talked about even on traffic in the road. We just drive badly and as if the road, he's, and I quote, he says, as if the road is ending, as if there's not enough road for all of us. You know, we don't follow traffic. We just want to do our own thing because we just feel, you know, there's just that scarcity mentality that somehow something will end. We don't know what it is on the road that will end, but somehow we won't get to where we're getting to. And so how do we unlearn that scarcity mentality and just come from a point of abundance that at the end of the day, as you said, this job will come and go. Some things in life will come and they won't go. But some things you can always be. If you just, excuse my French, but if you passed on, you know, your job will be advertised the next Monday. Guys, we move on. So how how do we cultivate a mentality of abundance?
It just takes me back to where we started, knowing yourself. When you know yourself, Billy, when you know yourself, you'll know your worth. If you know yourself, you'll know that I need to go back to school. I need to go do my master's. I need to do some certification courses. Because you know yourself. If you know yourself, you'll know the areas where you need to build yourself more. You'll also know the characters in you that you need to demolish, do away with. And by that, you're cultivating abundance through value. Because you know yourself, you know that, you know what? I'm not going to run, I'm going to walk. Because my focus is on a particular area that I have already garnered expertise in and experience in, and therefore it will find me. Why? Because there is nobody like me. For example, whenever I'm called for an interview, there is something I love saying and I always say. I say that I have a very unique balance of expertise and experience. My skill set is unmatched. Why do I say that? Because through my years of experience, I have practiced law for 12 years now. Many have gone ahead of me, but not many have ventured into the field that I ventured in, which is risk assessment, balancing law and business. I don't do flat-based law. I come in to tell you in your organization that, hey, listen, this product is not good for your organization because you have not done a risk assessment. And for that, I mean legal risk assessment. How is this product valuable to you based on the regulatory requirements of this country at this particular time, have you considered, have you thought that 3 years to come, there will be laws that may be enacted that would be against your objectives as a organization? So you have to stand out. You just don't walk. You stand out. Stand up, then stand out. So that's when you'll cultivate abundance. But if you're just like every other person, of course, the few jobs that are there for every other person will be scarce. You'll be running for them. So just set yourself apart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And now take me back to Little Rose. Did Little Rose, at the time when she's growing up, know her worth? Because you talked about knowing your worth. And not really your worth, right? How do you build your worth intrinsically and not extrinsically from people's validation and all of that? And then as well as how have you learned to sell yourself to all these different places that when you're in a room and put in rooms, they just say, we want Rose in this room. This room is not right without Rose in it. You know, because I'm sure there are rooms where people can try move on, but they're like, no, there's someone who's missing. Someone has to be here. Someone, even though they're on maternity leave, we'd rather postpone this leave. This
yes.
Over here. So how was all this?
So I grew up in a very close-knit family. I'm a last one. I grew up very, very covered, very secured, very protected. Spoiled. Not quite, but very provided for. Very provided for, very sheltered. And I learned at the feet of my siblings, who are very strong personalities. I grew up in the care of my mom, who's a super strong personality, and who would wade through anything. And I also enjoyed the privilege of watching my siblings, five of them, different personalities, all strong, specialized in different areas of career, very different. And with that, I was able to copy a lot and also say, I'm more like so-and-so, less like so-and-so. And they were always willing, because of the age gap, I come very late in their life. But because of the age gap, they also made a lot of good decisions for me. When I was still too little to make decisions for myself, they did. They did. For example, when I cleared my fourth form, I wanted to do engineering, computer engineering specifically. But it didn't make sense to them. But my second brother took it upon himself, went to Parklands Law School, failed in a faculty transfer for me. And that's how I ended up doing law. I didn't think I was good for law. But they had seen a lot in me that I had not seen. My personality. I thought I would be a techie, but I'm not good in tech. I actually hate tech. I hate tech with a passion now. I would not have survived two semesters. So for me, I think as Little Rose, I was just privileged. I just thank God for placing me where he did, giving me siblings and in-laws and a mother who is everything that I would ever need for molding. Mm. Yes, so for me it was just God, family, that's all.
And now that you bring up family, talk to me more about probably the importance of family, because I think we live in a probably world right now that doesn't really focus so much on family. We think that family is just any you know how the saying used to be, blood is thicker than water, but these days we add our own caveats and just say you know, like, family isn't everything. You choose family. And of course, there's those extreme cases where, of course, people's families are not the best. But just talk to me a bit about the importance of having a family that really has your back, and a family that really wants to see you win.
I always say that blood is thicker than Fanta. Why I say that? Because the blood is not sweet, but Fanta is sweet. Friends are sweet. But you know what? When you need transfusion, you won't be asking for Fanta. You'll ask for blood. And look at it this way. It's raining. You're walking, you're in the middle of a field. It's raining. And suddenly, you just spot an umbrella lying around. No, you didn't see anybody place it there. There's just an umbrella lying somewhere. And you run, you grab it, you cover yourself, you're dry, you walk to your destination. That umbrella is what family is. Nobody placed them there. You found yourself there with them. You're stuck. You don't choose. So just the way you'd treasure this umbrella is the way you should treasure this family. When all is said and done, family comes through for you. And I have seen, I've had people who come from, toxic families, but they're still family. At the end of the day, they're still family. Know yourself. Know when to go this extra mile for people. Know when to stop when there is toxicity. Know how to fix yourself. Know how to leave. Know when. But for me, even if I had toxic family members, honestly speaking, I would never want to drop my surname. I would never want to drop my grandfather's name. I bear it even in my marital home. I bear it. Actually, my name in my marital home is the daughter of so-and-so, because that's the family I know.
Yeah.
So family is that banner, that umbrella, that shield that you need. You'll never walk alone. You'll never. It's always good to be known as part of a family.
Yeah. And so again with that, how, now that you have your own family, how do you cultivate a tight-knit family, a family that genuinely you'd call family? But I think obviously parenting styles and how your parents raise children really affects how you grow up as siblings, how you hold space for each other. So for you, with your own family, how have you learned that? Is it easy creating a or having a family that's very tight and very loving towards each other? Or what parenting styles do you, or what intentionalities have you and your husband decided that this is how we want to raise and have our home? Yeah,
so for us, it was not easy at first. Our little one, our first one, came before we had a lot of conversation around this parenting thing. And we thought it was just going to be a walk in the park. But we realized we had very different parenting styles. And it basically emanated from how we were brought up very differently. But we had to have very intentional conversations around parenting. What do we want for these children? We have two sons. And our decision was that we're first going to be their parents first, then their friends. We're not going to be friends first. We're going to be parents first, than their friends. But we are going to build trust. Trust amongst the four of us. We want that each of us can trust the other. We're going to create a very strong circle that nobody can break. A bond that nobody can break. And by that, we mean that we have to be intentional. We have to be open. We have to respect each other. I respect my son who is 1 year old. I do. I have to respect him. If he wakes up from a nap and he's angry, he needs time off, I give him time off. I actually wait. I knock their rooms. I just don't buzz in. But when all is said and done, I do that so that they can learn. I do that so that they can also respect people in society. So while we are parenting, we are also teaching, we are also mentoring. Our style of disciplining is more of talking so that the child can understand that here they've erred. We hold on to luxuries a lot. We do. We have
a lot. Wow. How?
A lot, trust me. Why I do that is because we're also bringing them up to realize that there are very many in the society who have less than we do. So if they don't walk in their shoes, I'll be raising brats. I'll be just raising silly children. So I have to make sure that they're aware, because I'm not able to take them to a slum and have them there for a sleepover. No, but I can tell them, hey, we can't have this. And we just can't have this because just we can't. And you see, I'm the only mother they have. There's nowhere they can take me.
Yeah.
But when they come back, they now really appreciate this thing that I had withheld from them. And my three-year-old, who is very vocal, would tell me, Mama, I now understand. And so we parent and we mentor and we build friendships as we go along. It's fun. Yeah. We love it. And yeah, we are waiting for Jesus together.
Hey, that's nice. That's really very interesting, very coincidental as well, that today my morning devotion was talking about some guy called Dr. Christopher, who was a researcher at Monash University, just saying that it was just explain how he's an expert at indirect learning, or some may call it learning by imitation, where children learn best, and it's been proven and tested that learn best from the examples of their parents and not just the, you know, they do this, but the parent is on Facebook the whole night, you know.
Oh.
But with that TikTok. As well, how have you been able to balance? Because I always tell this story about how the podcast, about how I said the podcast, just to learn about the intricacies of life and how people experience life differently. And how, for example, probably going to a public high school just opened my eyes to some of the realities of life. So how have you learned to find that balance where you're not depriving your children of the privileges that they have, but again, they're fully understanding that that other people are not able to live this life? Because for some of us, I remember, if that happened to me, probably I'd think my parents are just being selfish, or just being stingy, but I don't understand that there are people who, for them, not having this thing that I'm crying for, would be a privilege, a big privilege, actually, you know?
Yeah.
So how have you learned to find that balance?
It's not easy because, okay, I can say it was not easy because, yes, you feel like you're frustrating this child, you're torturing this child. But look at it this way. How are you securing him for hardships tomorrow? Life is something that is very uncertain. Tomorrow, Kevin and I may not be here. Our families may not be here. Tomorrow, we will send them away for school. They'll be alone. Will they manage when they have less than what they're usually used to? Mm-hmm. Will they manage? So I look at it from this point of view. I am not raising Chiwo for now. I'm not raising Harry for now. I'm raising them for tomorrow. I want these boys to be movers and shakers tomorrow. I just don't want regular children. No. I want children who are going to raise the bar for their generation. Yes. But surely, if I don't toughen them for tomorrow, who will? And as I said, my role as a mother is 360 degrees centralized. By that I mean, I have to make sure that I'm raising people who are whole. Whole. People who know that, you know what? Today, I only have 2 slices of bread. So I can't just eat it all for breakfast. I'll eat a slice now, and because I'll be hungry at 4 o'clock, I'll eat the other slice at 4. So I have to teach and teach. So what I have done is I read a lot. I pray a lot. I have decided to partner with God in this parenting journey. And I just gain wisdom from slowing down, figuring things out, figuring these boys out, their personalities, and then implementing. That's why I said we are parents first, we are friends next.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
My mom would love to hear that. She'd agree with you. Even us, when you're growing up, she used to tell us, I am your parent first.
Yes.
I'm your friend.
We are not
adding you on Facebook. We are not.
Correct. We are not age mates. Correct.
Now that we're in parenting, take me back first to pregnancy. How is pregnancy life? Is it what you always thought it would be?
That is ghetto. Pregnancy is ghetto.
That is the pregnant full... women seem like they're enjoying life.
Oh,
life
my
is their face. No pressure. Soft life.
For me, I didn't enjoy pregnancy as much because for my first pregnancy, I was anxious the entire time, and I developed preeclampsia, and the baby had to come early. For my second pregnancy, I was not anxious. He came unplanned, and I was just like, no, Rose, you're always organized. You were supposed to conceive after 5 years of your first child. Why are you conceiving after almost 2 years? No, this is not you. So the entire time I was planning. My second pregnancy, the entire time I was planning. I was planning. But why I say it's ghetto, it's because it changes a lot of things. Oh my goodness. You move from a size 6 shoe size to a size 8 without passing through size 7. Your face is all nose. Suddenly everything is smelling of garlic. No, pregnancy is ghetto. But when the end product comes out, it is more ghetto. It is more ghetto than walking around with a bulging tummy. Because everybody tells you, oh, congratulations for a bundle of joy. What bundle of joy?
Which one is this you're speaking of?
You have serious surgery wounds. You are sleep deprived. Sometimes you don't have milk. This little being is crying, has a mind of its own. And somebody there tells you, sleep when they sleep. So they sleep when you're taking a walk, basking them out in the sun. Do you lie down there and sleep? When they sleep, you have bottles to wash. You have milk to express. You have another child who is a toddler to think about. Then there is the husband who comes first. So, pregnancy, ghetto, super ghetto. Wachana nayo. But now, when you find your balance, when you find your balance, you start bonding with this child. I surprise people by saying that I didn't bond with my children the first month of them being born because I didn't know how. I was figuring them out. I can't bond with somebody I don't know. And sometimes it makes me wonder, is it really true that parents bond with children immediately, or are they just lying? Because you're bonding with a stranger.
Yeah.
You're bonding with a stranger. How? I thought you bond with people you know. So for me, my first month after delivery is figuring out this tiny little being, asking God so many questions, looking at him, trying to figure out, is this one the feisty one? Is this one the calm one? And after that, everything falls into place.
But now that we know Rose, as you said, organized, she knows her stuff.
Oh,
she
yes.
She kind of know her things, it's Rose. So in the first pregnancy, what was making you this anxious? Especially, I'm sure you've raised a couple of your siblings' children. So
yeah.
What made you this anxious? What took you by surprise?
Let me tell you, Billy, when it's yours, when it's your baby, you're like, oh my gosh. So the anxiety was based on the fact that I had just started a big job. I had just started off before I found out that I had conceived. I was like a month into the job. So first and foremost, you're wondering, okay, how am I going to disclose this? Then you decide, okay, it will disclose itself. But then half the time you're sleepy. Remember, you're new at a job. And the job is quite demanding. The job is really taxing. It's involving. Then you're like, okay, I need to do this. I want this baby to come when a nursery is ready. I actually need to buy a new car. I need a car that, you know, the car seats will... I need to travel to go shop for this child. Mtoto wangu atavaa mtumba. Pregnancy is ghetto. The baby came when I had bought nothing. My family was shopping for this child when I was in hospital. The only thing we had bought was the crib. And I think I'm mosquito net. We had not, because we had, we will shop when it's month 7.4 going 8. That is how organized we were, so that we wash the clothes, so that the clothes are fresh, not clothes that were washed 5 months before the baby came. The baby came when we had nothing. We went to hospital with nothing. So, yes.
Man plans, God laughs.
It was the anxiety. I overplanned, but I didn't achieve anything. Because, yes, my family was shopping on phone with me when I was on the bed in hospital.
Screaming for your life.
By the way, I go for cesarean because the babies come early. They come early. They come because of issues beyond my control, which is high blood pressure. So the babies have to be extracted from my womb. So it's neat. It's not those chaotic ones where, nakufa, nakufa. No,
I don't do this. You can't relate to that.
No, thank you.
And now with that as well, did you experience postpartum?
Good question. Very sensitive question, because yes, I went through postpartum. It's something I'm never, let me say, I'm not proud of, because you are supposed to be enjoying your bundle of joy, as you call them. But this tiny bundle of joy is a bundle of distress. So remember, the baby came early. I was not ready. And I also didn't know what postpartum depression was or is. I didn't know. So I'm back from hospital. Thank God I've come back to the house with the nurse, because I didn't have a very easy experience in hospital. We had to stay in hospital for almost 3 weeks because the baby had issues and had to stay in NICU. So when we come back home, there is just so much. You're looking at this baby, the lungs are still developing, the baby is sick, you're still sick yourself. And I can't make my husband understand what I'm going through. He is happy. He's happy, and watching him was just sending me into depression. His paternity ended after 10 days. He went back to work. He was sharing photos of that child everywhere. But no, that time, I'm in a dera. 2 months, I wore a dera. You know what a dera is?
Yes.
I wore deras for 2 months. Depression pop. So from being this person who is always very neat, wants to look good, but you don't even have the energy to comb your hair. Because you're just tired. You're just tired. So I thought it was fatigue, but it was postpartum depression, because I just was removed. I always thank God for this nurse. She's called Emily, who took care of my son while I was figuring myself out, and she only left when I was good to go. So yes, these things happen. Postpartum depression is real. It's horrible. It only comes because of pregnancy, which is ghetto.
And can you explain to me more about this existential crisis of postpartum, where on one hand, as you said, everyone expects you to be so happy and over the moon over this bundle of joy. All of us, especially now that we're like, finally, you have your baby, whatnot. And some of us, as you said, even men, we'd never understand that reality. We'd never understand, because you're supposed to be happy. What do you mean you're not as happy? And then now this other side where you're feeling guilty that you're not happy. You're not as happy as you should be, as everyone else has told you you're supposed to be. And people don't have these conversations openly.
Yeah, I think it's just because we have different expectations. For me, as I told you, I had plans. I knew the baby is coming. Chiwo was supposed to be born on the 4th of July. That was the due date that our doctor gave us. But Chiwo came in May. He came end of May. So you see, you think that you have it all planned. You want a nursery that looks like this. You have Google. You have invested in Pinterest.
But then,
yes, then this baby just comes mannerlessly and pulls up. But you had not done all these things. So it reorganizes you in a way that's not too good. So, and then, you know, there is this things that are called hormones. Those ones you cannot control. Everything is just hyper in you. Sometimes people are laughing. You just burst out crying. And you're wondering, why am I crying? You know, many times you think that it's that pregnant woman who is going through these motions and can't figure themselves out. But you who has delivered prematurely, you know your body is still pregnant. Yes, your body still acts pregnant. Your body still figuring out, okay, what happened? There is this person who was growing in me. Where did they go to? It just doesn't sleep overnight. And then there's a lot to do. Remember, you're still a wife. You're now a mother. You're still a daughter. You're still a friend. You're still an employee. So there's quite a lot. And then, you know, this 3 months maternity period, is that just this period of fixing yourself? You know, you're still looking at your tummy that looks like rototank. There is this baby who's not sleeping. There is milk that is playing hide and seek with you. There is this husband who was also pregnant, but you know, you did not give time for. So for 9 months, you guys have barely bonded. So it's quite a bit. It's quite a bit, and it's all in your hands. And you're still supposed to be that superwoman with a bundle of joy that is sleeping.
So with that, what did you advise a mother who's going through that? Like, what would you tell them? Like, how
to help. Get a lot of help. Don't shy off. Don't shy off. Don't do it for people. Just do you. If you want, and if you can afford 3 house helps, get 3 house helps. Afford 3 house helps, get 3 relatives. Talk to the husband, let the husband understand that you're not superwoman. Yes. Let him know how to fix his teas. Let him know how to fix his coffees. Let him know, because his hands, he came into the marriage with hands and a brain. He didn't leave the home. So get help, get support, then take a break. As I told you, for us, our baby was cared for a month by a nurse, and we used to take breaks. Take that walk, go and devour that pizza, come back feeling nothing. And anyway, you've already given birth. This baby will live. You'll have eternity with him or her.
They won't die in that 1 second. You want to get a breather.
If you're tired and the baby has a wet diaper, trust me, no child has ever died or from a wet diaper and they've been wet only for 10 minutes. Just rest, but get lots of help. And just Be constantly in touch with yourself. How are you feeling? Are you tired? What do you do when you're tired? Do everything possible to avoid postpartum depression. And if you've experienced postpartum depression, just make sure that you continue getting in touch with yourself so that it does not manifest into something else. Yeah.
And what would you tell husbands? Because I think, as you said, probably sometimes as men, we are very removed from what these things are. Some men don't even understand. They're wondering, why are you acting up? Are you supposed to be happy? Where's my coffee? Now you back home. Where is, you know? So how would you advise partners to be more supportive?
If you marry the right person, that should not even be a problem. But if you marry a jerk, oops, sorry.
So the marriage, it goes wrong. You don't even start here.
If you married a friend, the friend will step in for you. If you married a colleague, the colleague will only do his part. He won't do your job. If you married a stranger, the stranger won't even do his part. The stranger will just walk away. So who did you marry?
who did you marry?
I married my friend.
How? Tell me how that... You know how ladies always like, oh, I hate it when I'm talking to a guy, then he wants to shoot his shot. I just thought we wanted to be friends. Able tell me how Kevin jumped out of the friend zone?
Kevin was never in the friend zone, actually. Kevin was married material from day one. At our first date, he said he wants to marry me. On the first date.
Ukacheka. Ama ukasema nini?
Ukacheka nini? Mambeta mi nataka tu kuolewa. We started dating from a point of knowledge.
Does he waste time? There's no...
We knew what we wanted. So for the 3 years that we dated, we knew what we wanted.
And from all the fish in the sea, in your sea, why was he the one that stood out?
Because of his personality, and because I think the fact that he knew what he was not that kind who wanted to date you for 10 years, waste your time.
Yeah.
For 10 years, and then you just meet a wedding card flying somewhere.
Yeah.
That's the name sounds familiar. Yeah, so that made him stand out, and his personality is different. He's not a regular guy.
Okay, yeah, true. You guys gel really well.
Thank you very much.
That's true. That one, I give it to you. You mwandike kitabu for us falling behind.
Mwandike kitabu?
Ikwe best-selling.
I will tell him.
So now you have the kids. Does it get easier?
Yeah, because we share the responsibility. Actually, Kevin is more hands-on than I am.
Kevin is now hands-on.
No, by the way, I am the joker in the marriage. Kevin, when it comes to parenting, Kevin is hands-on. Kevin is that one who will. By the way, I don't wake up at night to care for the children at all.
Hey.
At all. I don't. My husband will wake up through the night. From the time they're born, unless he's traveled, I don't. I
God
sleep.
Answered your prayer.
I sleep till morning. I sleep till morning. Then I ask, Waliamka?
Mungu alijibu maombi.
Yeah.
And now, actually talk to me about the first time you now had to go back to work and leaving your baby. Now, a stranger who now you trust, but still, you know, you're leaving your baby now, kabisa, going to work.
Easy at all. Not easy at all. For me, we had to actually install nanny cams so that we can just sit at work and watch the child. But nanny cam is just recipe or high blood pressure, super high blood pressure, because you will see how you have for a nanny. Unazima tu.
Unazima, nisikasirike sahi.
Unazima tu. That is why I'm telling you, when I realized that my mental health was being affected because of the organization I was working for, my boss specifically, I took a very big decision. We were at this place where we needed two salaries that we had. And one morning I just came home and I told Kevin, I'm quitting. And he told me, if you're not happy, quit. You'll get something. And yes, I went back and I quit. And I cared for the children, and I'm happy that I spent the period of time at home, and because COVID had just come in. COVID had just started. So I bonded a lot with my firstborn, in the process conceived the secondborn, and went back to work. Yes. Mm. Yeah, and so for now, the bond, I think the bond that we have with the kids is strong because of the amount of time we invested in the formative months, I can see. The initial months, yes.
And I'll thank you for that later. Mark these words. And now, tell me a bit about quitting as well, because we live in a culture where we frown upon quitting, but someone told me there's nobility in quitting, in stopping things that don't serve you anymore, in quitting things that are not good for you. And a lot of us don't look at it from that perspective. We always look at it from, okay, so you always look at it from the point where you're then losing. So tell me about, does this confidence just come? How do you build this confidence that you can actually walk to you and say, I'm resigning and it's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, God will take care of the rest of whatever is to come. Mm.
But do you know yourself well enough to quit? That is the question people should ask themselves. What do you have that will buffer you during the period that you'll have quit a job and you'll be between jobs? Do you know your worth? Kama tu uko tu na form 4 certificate au una form na ulipatiwa kazi mahali, my friend, work. Stay there.
Please.
But if you figured you out, you have figured you yourself out. You will quit and even go and knock the doors of state outs. Utafunguliwa. Because you know your worth. What I usually struggle with is when somebody says, I'm in such a bad job, but I can't quit. I can't. So you'd rather run insane at that place and you will still get fired. Or you will still just lose balance with everything and everyone else because of that paycheck. Doors open when you actually knock at them. Auta car like 10 miles away from a door that you want to open. You knock, then you open. And that is why the word of God says that we don't have because we don't ask. For me, as I've told you, me have partnered with God in a lot of areas in my life, a lot. And I just tell him, God, this is not working out for me. And trust me, Billy, he speaks. He does. Many times I've told him, this is not working out. And when I quit, God knew I needed to spend time with Chiwo. And he knew that it's good time to conceive so that these two kids can grow together. And now I look at them growing, and in their growing, they're friends, and we're building a bond. And now I'm back to work. I'm finished with the pregnancy issues. I finished. Now we are parenting. So we are growing together. But I had to take that plunge. But when I figured out that, you know what, I'm a lawyer. I'll do consultancy. I will advise. I will draft legal instruments. I will represent people. I will make money from the comfort of my home. I quit.
I know to tell people never put yourself in a position where you feel like you're the one who's losing.
Yeah. You, have, you can't be a beggar in a suit. You can't.
Yeah. Eh, Jamani. You can't. And again, closed mouth don't get fed. As you said, if your hand is umefunga mkono, you can't get any, you can't receive anything. How?
How? Yeah, so the future is for the brave.
Yes. As one of your brothers would say, this world is for the brave. So be brave.
Yes, it's for the brave. Yes, so be brave. You must be brave. You can't be regular.
Only say the people who are less qualified than you, who are getting the positions you'd have gotten, but because they're brave, they're getting this position so easily.
Yeah.
And you'll always wonder in the I could have, would have, should
exactly.
have.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm.
Very so, true.
Even now, as we wind up, let's just circle back to our initial topic about a bit of networking. Because you've talked about how, you stood on shoulders of giants, your siblings, right?
Yeah.
And now it's about networking and putting yourself in places of value. And I always tell people that networking is an art. I don't think you can just wake up and be good at networking, because for a lot of people, always want to see what can I get out of this networking and not what value you can bring to these people. So for you, how have you learned, especially knowing the legal world, networking is almost everything. You didn't even know there are no little law, but have very good networking skills. So how have you learned to put yourself in this place of value and sell yourself so well that when we met, if I met you at an event, I'm bound to remember you vis-a-vis the many other people who were at that event?
Okay. So for me, how I did it is, my mentor, he's now resting, waiting for the Lord to come back. He's called Kai Wolf. Kai Wolf was my boss at my first job after my pupillage. And this man got me raw. I was coming from pupillage at a government organization that had been for 5 years. I still couldn't even draft a letter. I couldn't even draft a contract. Kai Wolf believed in me. I was coming from an intern role to a manager role. And I used to pinch myself every day. But this person believed in me. And he was an engineer. And he was the CEO of this company. And just the way he held my hand, he kept on telling me, ask. If you can't draw a contract properly, ask. Google. You have a laptop. Google. Ask. And Kai Wolf would pay for any course that he would see anywhere for in-house legal counsels. And I would go. Any course he would. And Kai was my boss for 7 years. And when I left that organization, I moved to the next organization, we still kept in touch. When I got my children, he would still come visit, see, because he taught me to create value so that when you're in a room, people will know, oh, there is Rose, the lady who has set up a very good legal department in this organization, and this organization. How collected, but very articulate, very, let people know you before they meet you. So that it helps you with networking. Networking is very difficult when you have to walk into a room and say, hi, my name is Rose. I'm head of legal in this organization. So it's a big organization, but the head of legal is not known. But you need to have made a difference here and there, quietly in your corner. That will speak for you. It will open doors for you. That is how come you find we have very many famous people who are very shy, very quiet. That's their way of networking. So for me, that is how I networked. Somebody held my hand, told me I need to ask, I need to grow, I need to learn. Go for trainings, go everywhere. I went for trainings outside the country. I was one of the youngest technology in-house lawyer in the 2020, that was in 2010, yes. So somebody held my hand. If it's too difficult for you, find somebody to hold your hand.
So Rose, be my Kai Wolf. This is a official proposal.
Anytime, anything for Kai, anything for his memory. That is one person I hope that everybody met. Kai was bigger than life, bigger than life, bigger than life. Yes.
Does he have a
just
memoir?
Google him. Kai Uwe Wolf.
I will, definitely.
Yes, a nice person.
But last of the last. I always say when I enjoy the conversation, I have many lasts. You talked also earlier about you're a picky person when it comes to friends.
Yes.
Who gave you this character development that eventually you had to become picky with your friends? Ama, have you always just been very selective with who you let into your
life? God just gave me a very strong spirit of discernment. So that is why I don't go for quantity. By the way, I'm so grateful that friends are yet to character develop me. But I think because I've always found enough in the tiny circle of friends that I have kept. My closest friends are my friends from high school. Three ladies. Yes. Those are my closest friends, my friends from high school. Then apart from that, I also make friends if certain experiences have brought us together. So in all my friendships, there is always something that brought us together, not just random conversation.
Yeah.
We must have something in common, a common experience, a common setup, a setback, a common job perhaps, a common challenge. Just something, but it just can't be because we go to church together, we are friends, no? It has to be beyond church. It has to be more than just going to church. Yes.
And the $1 million question, are your colleagues your friends?
No, they're my colleagues.
How do you set that boundary now that we're entering this working life? How do you set that boundary?
Just be very clear. You went to that organization to work. Yes. If a friendship comes along, the better. Because now you will have somebody to do life with at work. If a friendship comes along, the better. But kawaida, your colleagues are your colleagues. When that job ends, when you go to a different job, will they be calling you? Will you guys be doing lunch together? That is the question you need to ask. Will you keep in touch? So I know you have that answer. Because we always know that. Yeah, we always know that if I leave this job, I will keep in touch with so and so. So you know, we always know the answer, but we are just not brave enough to admit that these are just colleagues.
And acquaintances. Even for acquaintances, we never want to make people feel bad. This an acquaintance.
Yes, these things are... We are just in a lot of denial. Yeah.
But denial is the first step.
Oh, yes. I just wish it was never a step because it would save us a lot of heartache.
Yes, a lot. I love a lot.
Yeah.
I let the listeners to trust the Bushanian pod for us at the Good, the Bad, and Bushanian. And tell us all the things they've loved about this episode. And cheers.